Dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder and president of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the war of ideas at Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. This is Frank Gaffney, your host and guide for what I think of as an intelligence briefing on the war for the free world. It is an extraordinary pleasure to have with us a man that I've come to know and regard as both a friend and colleague for many years during his service both in government and at the Heritage Foundation. He is Dr. Kim Holmes. He served with considerable distinction as an Assistant Secretary of State for International Organizations at the George W. Bush administration's State Department. He is these days a distinguished fellow of the Heritage Foundation, where he worked for many years as a vice president with responsibility for the foreign and defense policy portfolio. These days, he has, I'm very pleased to say, some time to write, and he has done so with great effect in a brand new book, The Closing of the Liberal Mind, How Groupthink and Intolerance Define the Left. He is giving us a full hour of his time to discuss his findings in this important book and what we should take away from it in terms of not only insights into the challenges we're facing here at home, but also to understand much about what's going on in the world at large in terms of groupthink and in terms of the radical left. Kim Holmes, welcome back to Secure Freedom Radio, and thank you for giving us an hour of your time.
It's my pleasure, Frank. It's really great to be with you.
Well, good. Let's start with some of the terms that are at the core of your analysis here, Kim. You help by reminding us of what liberalism historically, traditionally, classically has been as a point of departure for finding how far we've come from it. Talk about that a little bit, if you would.
Sure. There's two elements of it. One is the actual history of liberalism as an intellectual movement. I'll say a bit about that in a minute. But there's also sort of the dictionary definition of what liberalism or liberal-minded means, apart from the way we use the word liberal in America for an ideological movement. If you go to any dictionary, liberal-minded means somebody who's open-minded, tolerant of opposing views, may have disagreement in principle with somebody, but believe strongly in the right to disagree and to have your own opinions. That's what liberal-minded means. As far as the history of liberalism as an intellectual movement is concerned, it has two elements. One is the American version, which really goes back to the American founding, to Thomas Jefferson, Madison, and even John Adams to a certain extent, where those people, our leaders and founders, were channeling the intellectual tradition of the moderate Enlightenment, mainly from the British Isles, from Scotland and England. Philosophers John Locke and the like believe in the social contract, individual rights, checks and balances on the government, and the idea that liberty was basically to protect the individual rights against government tyranny. That was the philosophy of the founding, of the American founding, and it's worked its way through our history over the last 2.5 centuries. But there was a European component as well in France and also in England, but France and even in Germany, where you had philosophers like de Tocqueville in France and François Guizot, Prime Minister of France, who were reacting to the excesses of the French Revolution and the terror and the revolutionary violent movements that happened in the left in the French Revolution and also in 1830 and 1848 in Europe. And so they developed also a European version of liberalism, which was similar to the American in the sense that they believed in individual rights. They were very concerned about too much government tyranny, too much government power. Then that's the classic liberal tradition in Europe. And so the two of them together still have a lot more in common than differences. But the basic idea is that the rights of people reside in the individual, and there is a very much a concern about too much concentration of power, particularly in the government, not only, but particularly in the government that could deny individuals their rights.
So that's where things began.
Right.
And
That's where it began.
What you've traced, really, in your new book, The Closing of the Liberal Mind, Kim Holmes, is a sort of radical transformation of that tradition of limited government and tolerance of others' views and the necessity, really, for the competition of ideas. And you've introduced a couple of terms that I want to make sure we also nail down. Along the trail towards progressivism and postmodern leftism, there has been a phenomenon that you describe very well as groupthink. Give us a flavor of the meaning of some of these terms and phenomena.
Groupthink refers today to the radical left in America, the progressive liberalism as it's become. We can recognize it in our university campuses, where you find speech codes and demands for safe spaces, shouting down people that you disagree with, disinviting prominent speakers from campuses, a very authoritarian, almost totalitarian mindset. That's probably the worst, but it's not the only place, and we'll probably talk more about that as the time goes on. But what I mean by groupthink is that if you go across the board, not only ideologically and philosophically in the university, you find a monolithic view, a very strong monolithic ideological view, where everyone pretty much instinctively agrees, and there's a consensus about what is right and what is wrong, what is true and what is not. And it's not only in the universities, but it is in the media. It's in certainly in the government officials, state and local and federal, in the progressive side of things, journalists, academics, activists, researchers, many of whom are actually funded either directly or indirectly by the government. These make up what I call the ruling class, the new ruling class in America. They're numbers probably, you know, anywhere between 50 to 100,000 people, but they're very influential, very wealthy. They're the ones who are pretty much occupy the commanding heights of American institutions in the federal government, in Hollywood, and our legal professions, and even increasingly mainstream churches. And they all share pretty much a progressive liberal outlook on life, particularly in cultural matters. They intermarry. They live in the same neighborhoods. They're concentrated a great deal on the eastern and western seaboards and in large cities. And Charles Murray's talked about them in his work, particularly his book on Coming Apart. And they are pretty much ideologically and culturally in sync. And so this makes their coordination of their policies and their preferences rather easy to do. You don't have to sit in a smoke-filled room and plot, and although that does happen in some cases at the activist level. But in the boardrooms, the corporate boardrooms and elsewhere, everyone pretty much shares a kind of similar outlook.
That would be the groupthink you're speaking of, right?
That's the groupthink. That's it right there.
And it's being enforced, I guess, is the point that you've also made, Kim Holmes, that this is not something that if one takes it in your mind to deviate from the group's thinking, the correct view, politically correct, I guess is the layman's term for it these days, it is not without consequence.
No, it's not. Kurt Schilling the other day was fired from ESPN for posting something on his private Facebook page. And this happens in all the time in the media and the corporate world, where people who step out of line, particularly if they take a position on one of the more controversial issues in identity politics or, you know, gender issues and the like, you know, that's the new battlefront for determining who's in and who's out and who's good and who's bad. And it becomes increasingly coercive in the public shaming rituals that are used and the exclusion of people who disagree. And it used to be called culture wars, but now it's gone beyond that. It's now actually entered into almost every aspect of our daily lives, in the schools, secondary, primary, certainly in the universities.
You have so many great terms for what we're dealing with here, one of which we're going to talk about more in a moment is authoritarian cool as a means of establishing that you have to conform. And if you don't, it's certainly not cool and it's not going to be good for your career. Kim Holmes is our guest. He is the author of a new book, The Closing of the Liberal Mind, How Groupthink and Intolerance Define the Left. And we'll be visiting with him about how this is manifesting itself, this groupthink, this, authoritarian cool, among other things, in our schools, in our churches, in our government, and more. Right after this.
Visit us at facebook.com/securefreedom with Frank Gaffney.